The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
And we do have lots of news, as Ursula just said. Earl Thomas is back with the Seahawks. A lot of people are asking me if he's going to play Sunday. I will let you know the latest that I have on that. And by the way, my weekly conversation with Coach Pete Carroll resumes this Friday. He will spend a half hour with us every week throughout the season. And we got a lot of other news to talk about. Let's get right into The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
As I talked about at the top of the show this afternoon, there are an awful lot of people who are very upset with Nike's new ad campaign that features Colin Kaepernick with the words, "Believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything." Sacrificing everything. I told you that I wish we had more military people in government service, because that's where you're selfless. That's where you make sacrifices. And when I read about this Nike ad, I thought about Nate Boyer, the Green Beret, who we talked to quite a bit when he was trying out with the Seahawks a few seasons back. And we had kind of a lousy phone connection when I talked to Nate this morning. So he joins us live now, Nate Boyer, here on Cairo Radio. Nate, it's always good to talk with you, sir.
Good to talk to you too, brother.
Okay, so Colin Kaepernick sacrificing everything for you and your comrades, you know, a lot of whom have given limbs and lives. I wanted to get your take on this Nike ad campaign, Nate.
Yeah, what throw me a super specific question, because I got a lot of different opinions, a lot of different takes. It's kind of tough, man. Like, it's not
okay.
It's a very complicated situation from the beginning 2 years ago to now. So it's not a, yeah, you helped me out a lot.
Okay, I will get more specific with you. When Colin started his protest, you were a very high-profile guy who stood by his side and counseled him. Do you think that it is appropriate to suggest that he is the face of one who has sacrificed everything?
I mean, if we're just, you know, specifically focusing on the slogan, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to say yes or no, because that puts me in a corner, paints me in a corner, puts me in a box. I think that it's dangerous. It's dangerous territory to suggest something like that, though, just because, you know, for me, when I hear sacrifice everything, I don't think, the last thing I think about is money. You know, we've been taught that since we were children, that money isn't everything. And if it's a matter of sacrificing money or, you know, your brand, that's far different than sacrificing your life, you know? And, so when I see that word everything, that's what strikes me as, I don't know, be a little bit off-putting for a lot of people, not only in the veteran community, but just, people in general.
when you and I tried to connect this morning on the phone, I played this soundbite. I'm going to play it again. Tim Kennedy, U.S. Army Special Forces. I know he's a good friend of yours, and here was his reaction to this Nike campaign.
Every single person in that room has lost 10 friends at least. Every single one of them. Every single person in that room. And then we walk in with a new Nike poster that's going to be at sale at Hot Topic or Barnes & Noble or wherever it's going to be a sell at, talking about giving, sacrificing. You know, you're just like, oh, man.
And I know Tim Kennedy's a good friend of yours. You hear the frustration in his voice. It sounds like you don't have that level of frustration. Even though you question this, do you not have Tim's level of frustration with this?
I definitely do. But I just react differently, because at the end of the day, I know, I mean, Nike's a business. They're trying to sell sneakers. It's a, I don't think in our history we've really seen, you know, a revolutionary that's got a brand sponsorship, as far as I know. I think it's, you know, Colin is more of a pop culture icon, I would say. He's a very big one, and he's obviously, you know, a huge advocate and a voice to many voiceless and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, this is a very different situation. And, you know, I don't think Nike would, they wouldn't do this if they didn't think it was profitable. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just as GQ put Colin on the cover, you know what I mean? And he's received a lot of awards from a lot of these big nonprofit organizations like Amnesty International and all that. I'm not saying he's not deserving at all. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is all of those brands and nonprofits are, they're absolutely capitalizing on his fame and all that. I mean, we have to understand that. We've got to notice that, because it's not as if Colin has been very outspoken throughout this whole thing, probably smartly, you know what I mean? Because he's staying somewhat, I don't want to say under the radar, but his voice is staying under the radar. The only time we ever hear him speak out is, you know, pretty much scripted situations, you know what I mean? Like a script that he has written or somebody has written that he's speaking at to receive an award, or the voiceover for the new Nike commercial and all that stuff. We haven't seen him do one interview, a candid interview. And that's what's frustrating to me, because I want to see and hear from Colin, truly from Colin, and know that it's Colin.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that takes some vulnerability and a lot of risk and all that too. So, you know, until we see that, it's going to be hard for a lot of people, I think, that disagree with him to even consider, you know, what he's saying to be really from him, I guess.
Yeah, we're talking with Nate Boyer, the Green Beret who tried out with the Seahawks, and wanted to get his thoughts on the Kaepernick thing. And you said something really important, that the people who have made strong social statements over our history, they weren't doing it as, you know, a corporate sponsorship. They had purity of motive. And I guess that's what I'd like to know. And you've talked to Colin. You were really important to him. When people saw a Green Beret standing next to Colin Kaepernick, and they said, okay, everyone who fought for his right to do what he wants during these anthem protests. Do you think there is a sincerity of purpose just from however much you've gotten to know Colin?
Yes. And the distinction there is to recognize that it's not an anthem protest. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
We've got to be more clear on that, because that's not what it is. It's a protest during the anthem, but what it's protesting is social injustices, right? So, and I think there is definitely a purity. And when I sat down with him, I felt this genuineness, you know, with him, and him actually listening and giving a damn about my perspective and my feelings. And we had this mutual respect for one another, because we actually listened and cared. And I'm not saying he's not like that anymore. All I'm saying is I think more of those situations would go a long way with him, because I think he can be somebody that helps unify our country. I really believe that. But it's going to take, you know, reaching across the aisle and listening to people that don't have your same perspective or experience, that have a completely different one, you know. And anybody that says, "Oh, he doesn't know because he was raised by white parents," or he doesn't,
right.
Like, nobody knows but Colin what his experience actually is. Okay, and even if he didn't experience, you know, heavy racism or stuff like that, he's still standing up for those that have, right. And that's important to recognize. And you know, we're blind if we're going to say that racism does not exist. It absolutely exists. Is the level of oppression in our country comparable to that in some of the places I spent time in, such as the Darfur and Afghanistan, Iraq? I don't think so, from my experience. But at the same time, you know, I've lived the white experience in America, so it's very different.
Yeah, it's that's really well put. And I guess I think the frustration on my end is more with Nike just trying to, you know, put into a slogan something that my knee-jerk reaction, I never served, like, you know, unlike you, I never served. My dad, he was a paratrooper at Normandy, but I saw this, I heard this, and I thought it's a slap in the face to people who have truly sacrificed. And but yeah, I appreciate getting your take on all of this. I really do.
Yes, sir. Of course.
Man, what's it like
what I'm
to
here for.
Well, every time Colin's in the news, Your phone just blows up because you were so generous with all of us. You know, when you're trying out with the Seahawks and we all have your number, it's got to be crazy that every when you hear a call-in story breaking, do you go, oh, no, here comes the deluge on me?
I'm just ready for Nike to give me my cut. That's all I'm asking for.
Okay. All right. Well, Phil Knight's
a big... It ain't going to happen. No. But, you know.
Phil Knight's a big fan of my show, so I'm sure he's listening right now, Nate.
He's a veteran as well.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's weird. Yeah, you're right. Okay.
Thank you for your service, Mr. Knight.
There you go. Well, and thank you for your service and your time. I love talking with you today, Nate. Thank you.
You too, sir. Thanks.
All right. Nate Boyer, the former, not former, always, once a Green Beret, always a Green Beret, but he's a really good man. And that was a great story when Nate, you know, I think he was 33 when he tried out with the Seahawks, and he's a good dude. Next up in the big lead.
The big lead, big local.
You know, I should have made this a big lead, I told you so, because we are just getting breaking news this hour that the owner of the Showbox Theater is filing a lawsuit against the city of Seattle for $40 million if the sale that he has made to this investment company that wants to build a 40-story condo building on the Showbox site. The city of Seattle wants to get in the middle of that. Kashama Sawant, other members of the city council, they have been part of this Save the Showbox campaign. Now, there's only one problem with that. The Showbox site is not a historical site. There was a review of the theater several years ago. They said the building does not have historical value. And so what the city of Seattle was doing was just stealing private property from the owners of the Showbox. Stealing it. If they and their plan was, well, we've got a Pike Place Historical District, and it goes right down the middle of First Avenue. The Showbox is on the east side. It's not part of it. So we're going to just do a redraw the line. So the Showbox is now in the historic district. But there was no precedence for that. There was no data to support it. There were studies that contradicted that. But Kashama Sawant, she has no problem stealing people's private property. And neither do the other socialists who run the Seattle City Council. So the Showbox Theater, and I had to try to, I worked really hard. You may recall this. A few weeks ago, we have a story, August 15th, we had a story up on My Northwest. I had spent that whole morning talking to commercial real estate people. I was trying to figure out how much the Showbox was being sold for. And I had to come up with a ballpark figure, and I said it was $30 to $60 million. Best estimate from our research. They are suing for $40 million. Saying that is what the city is essentially stealing from the Showbox owners. But the city is also stealing hundreds of millions of dollars from the taxpayers if they somehow save the Showbox. The property taxes on those 40 stories of condos would throw off at least $6 million a year. So over the next 30 years, with appreciation, we're talking about $250 million in property taxes. The real estate excise tax, every time one of those condo units sells, that would be $50 million in lost tax dollars. The city of Seattle's always crying poverty. We don't have enough money. We got to raise your taxes. And yet here was a private sale between the Showbox owner and the Vancouver developer that would have produced well over $250 million in tax revenues to the city over the next 25, 30 years. Well, according to Crosscut, they say that the owner now is suing the city for $40 million because that's how much they're losing as real estate owners if the city of Seattle gets in the middle of this private deal. I've told you a million times, I love the Showbox, been to a couple of shows there. I'm not a frequent visitor, but I've been to a couple of shows there, and I enjoyed it. But people's musical memories is not justification to steal $40 million worth of real estate from a private owner. And it was outrageous. And what I've said many, many times, you have the whole music community, in, you know, including my Guns N' Roses buddy and Eddie Vedder and people like Katy Perry who played the Showbox. They signed a letter and they said, got to save the Showbox. If, you know, Duff and Eddie and Katy, if they all want to buy the building for $40 million from this private owner and operate the theater at a tremendous loss, because if your purchase price is $40 million, you are not going to make enough running shows there to make your nut. But if a private foundation wants to pool their money, buy the Showbox, set up a trust that can operate it as a music venue, that's the way, that's the only way this should happen. But the city of Seattle stealing private property from a private individual or a private corporation, and corporations are people, then you can't tolerate that. We cannot tolerate our government having that kind of contempt for private property rights, because nothing is more essential to a free republic than private property rights. And the city council got way out of control on this one. That is your big lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
We got a lot more to do. Our favorite sound bites of the day. And we're getting some breaking news. President Trump has responded to that top story that CBS had at the top of the hour, saying that an anonymous senior administration official said that Trump is acting in a way that's detrimental to the republic. Donald Trump has just responded to that. So we got lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. Okay, so I'm looking forward to this. So if during Ursula's newscast you heard hysterical laughter in the background.
Oh, I heard it.
Oh, I heard it.
Yeah.
So the New
Sorry.
York...
Sorry.
The New York Times published an anonymous op-ed this morning that they say was a senior administration official, a Trump administration official, who claims to be part of the resistance to Trump, but not from the left. And in the op-ed, the anonymous administration official said, many Trump appointees have vowed to do what we can to preserve our democratic institutions while thwarting Mr. Trump's more misguided impulses until he is out of office. Well, Donald Trump has just responded. And do we have the audio now? Can I refresh?
Yes.
Okay.
Hold on.
So
close.
Hey, I was trying to get this before my newscast, and I couldn't get it fast enough.
Right. But... So Nicole's just downloading the audio. So a few minutes ago, Trump is just standing in front of a bunch of White House staffers.
He's on a big rug. So everybody's around him, and then he's in the middle of a rug, just wandering around the rug while he explains all of his accomplishments. He actually reads them.
That's it. Nicole was downloading this.
I know. She was laughing hysterically. And this comes on the heels just quickly of that book, you know, the excerpts of this book.
Oh, the Woodward book.
Yeah. So, okay. So he's already.
Here, and this is long. I haven't previewed this. It's just raw. But
we might have to skip through some accomplishments.
Okay.
There's a lot.
Here's Donald Trump's response to the anonymous New York Times op-ed just moments ago. We bring you this breaking news.
And, you know, the dishonest media, because you people deal with it as well as I do, but it's really a disgrace. I will say this. Nobody has done what this administration has done in terms of getting things passed and getting things through. A article was just printed, just came out a few minutes ago. Trump breaks the record for budget gridlock wins, scores big wins. So... For 20 years, it's a 20-year record. For 20-year record.
And I got to give you the visual of this, too. It's like he's doing theater in the round.
And his audience is...
Well, it's like the debate
staffers.
With Hillary when he was pacing around the carpet.
And so he's kind of twisting and turning. He's got a fistful of papers.
Sometimes he looks right at the camera.
record. They call it the fouled up budget gridlock. And scores, big win. Here's your thing. So this just came out. So in 20 years, it hasn't been like it is now. It's we broke it. That's just really positive stuff. And then in addition to that, point after point after point, if you look,
what's he showing?
Almost 4 million jobs created.
It's a piece
created.
Of paper that has a paragraph highlighted on it.
He's waving.
He's done the yellow. It's just the yellow pen.
The thing that's so confounding and baffling about all of this is I agree with him on all of these accomplishments, and I do think he's accomplished so much, but I also think that he's half a click away from full-on crazy. But I agree about all these accomplishments.
Since the election.
Okay, so should I just skip ahead to the last couple of minutes here?
I guess.
Okay. I wish we could play the whole thing.
Nobody has ever done, in less than a two-year period, what we've done. So when you tell me about some anonymous source within the administration, probably who's failing and probably here for all the wrong reasons. No. And the New York Times is failing. If I weren't here, I believe the New York Times probably wouldn't even exist. And someday... And someday when I'm not president, which hopefully will be in about 6.5 years from now... The New York Times and CNN and all of these phony media outlets will be out of business, folks. They'll be out of business because there'll be nothing to write and there'll be nothing of interest. So nobody has done what this administration has done. And I agree, it's different from an agenda, which is much different than ours. And it's certainly not your agenda, that I can tell you.
Thank you.
It's about open borders. It's about letting people flee into our country. It's about a disaster and crime for our country. So they don't like Donald Trump, and I don't like them because they're very dishonest people. Remember this also about the New York Times. When I won, they were forced to apologize to their subscribers. They wrote a letter of apology. It was the first time anybody's ever done it because they covered the election incorrectly. So if the failing New York Times has an anonymous editorial, can you believe it? Anonymous, meaning gutless, a gutless editorial. We're doing a great job. The poll numbers are through the roof. Our poll numbers are great. And guess what?
Wait a second. No, they're not. Even Rasmussen, which is the most favorable by far.
Yes.
Rasmussen, he was down to 44% this morning. And they were the only one. Let me. I
but then I'm sure for him, that's fake news.
But it's. This is funny. I mean, I think it's funny.
Nobody is going to come close to beating me in 2020 because of what we've done. We've done more than anybody ever thought possible in, it's not even 2 years. So thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Okay, I will also say, I do, you know, in an anonymous op-ed in the New York Times, that...
But they're not even denying that this person works in the White House. They're basically saying, now the White House press secretary, there's a quote, I'm just getting all these alerts.
Yeah.
Author of Resistance Op-Ed is a coward and should do the right thing and resign.
I agree with that.
I know, but they're not disputing that this person exists in there.
You and Nicole will never do this to me, will you?
No, because the day to have done that would have been yesterday.
Today's Sign is coming up next. And down the stretch we come. What a day, what a show, what a show, what a day. All right, and still lots more show to present to you with today's edition of
Today's Sign that the end is near.
Today's Sign the World is soon coming to an end. Dateline, planet Earth. This is truly a Today's Sign the End is Near. 200 actors, musicians, and scientists have signed on to an apocalyptic warning to the world. They are demanding that politicians act firmly and immediately on climate change. The list of artists and actors who have signed off on this include Tim Robbins, Bradley Cooper, William Dafoe, Ralph Fiennes, and Jude Law. Well, if Jude Law wants action, we better take action. They say it's time to get serious because we're going to have permanent earthly damage. They warned that in just decades, there will be almost nothing left of the planet. Now, the thing that I find a bit ironic, I bet every single one of those actors has a carbon footprint 10 times or 20 times that of you and me. And that's why I know that they're not serious. When Al Gore, you know, is preaching the apocalypse because of climate change, and he has a 10,000 square foot mansion and spends more energy in a month than you and I do in 2 years, I know he's not serious, but he's gotten rich off of it. These people, these actors, they will be praised at a Hollywood party in a 20,000 square foot mansion for their environmental awareness. It's just all for show. It's just all an accessory. There's no sincerity. You know who's sincere? Ed Begley Jr. I believe that he actually thinks this stuff because of the way he lives his life. I disagree with the conclusions he's reached, but I appreciate his sincerity in that he actually lives his life trying to have as small a carbon footprint as possible. Most actors don't. And, you know, President Obama, when he would talk about this all the time, but he's got his, you know, mansion scattered all around the country now and flies in private jets to give speeches. And if you truly believed that this is going to lead to the end of the world, you would not live your life in environmentally extravagant ways, like most of these actors. They're all just hypocrites. Today's signed story number two. Do you ever get a message from your bank and they want to make sure, you know, maybe when you're traveling and you forgot to tell them you're going to travel and they message you or they even call you and say, hey, we just want to make sure this is you using your account and that your card wasn't stolen. I always appreciate that. I don't ever feel like I'm being intruded upon. I actually like that my bank is diligent about security. Oh, well, this person is not. Sophia Reese, a biological man, lives as a woman, has not transitioned yet, but her bank did not, she made a call to the bank and they didn't believe that she was who she claimed to be because she doesn't sound like a she. And the bank said, well, how do we know that you are Sophia? Because you don't sound like a Sophia. And, oh, she was furious. She says that she started crying. She's over in the United Kingdom. She started crying. She was so upset that the bank didn't believe that the person with this voice is a Sophia.
I am Sophia Reese. I'm a transgender woman and I have problems with my bank that I've been banking for quite a while, where I tried to make a transfer of money to pay for some items I bought and end up being refused to do it, having my account blocked and my card blocked and asked to identify myself at the bank. Which they already have all the information.
Okay, let me pause this. So I know that she says that she let them know she's transgender, but you wouldn't know that that's Sophia in the phone conversation, and I would think Sophia would appreciate an extra level of diligence to make sure that, you know, it's not somebody, some guy who's trying to hack her account.
About my transgender situation and the change of documentation. So it was quite embarrassing. It was humiliating. And I'm not happy about it.
What do you want to happen?
I want to for the bank to to actually flag up on the system so this situation don't happen again with other people like me, because it could have been a transgender teenager.
Okay. So anyway, Sophia's very upset and she wants some action at the bank. And finally, in today's sign, what's the best way to welcome a group of kindergartners back to the new school year? Why, hiring a pole dancer, of course. That's what they did at the private kindergarten in Shenzhen, China. The principal approved a seductive dance routine on a pole topped with the Chinese flag. Do we have any pole dancing music by any chance? Any pole dancing music in our extensive library? This just shows how old I am. I haven't been to a strip club in, I don't know, 30 years? 30 years ago, I had friends who were getting married. And I think two or three times, they had bachelor parties at strip clubs. And all I remember is that those two or three times, somebody would come out. Strip clubs are so boring. What I remember of them, really boring. But there was just always one dance where they'd come out with a hat. Dance around a chair to this song. I'm guessing they probably aren't still playing this today. This is just the only reference point I had for the topic. Sing it, Joe! You can leave your hat on. The principal tried to defend the kindergartner pole dance, saying that it was good exercise. But after a barrage of complaints from parents, the principal got fired hours after apologizing for what she now calls a horrific viewing experience. Oh, man. And all of that is today's sign. The end is near. I got to get out of here. I have said everything I have to say for today. But I will go home and think up a bunch of new stuff for tomorrow's show. Rod and Todd coming up next, and I will see you back here tomorrow. High noon. Head up.
Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-woo!
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.